This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting. Put them hands up. Yeah, put them hands up.
Heal more straight from violence. No more bully sirens. We won alliance. Common sense need applying. Sick of all separation. Rise up from hatred. Black and white unite the nation. Amazing, amazing, amazing. So damn amazing. We live for days of no crime. We need more scholars, deep minds. Less drug dealer, more leaders shining. Plus more father figures, less time in. It's so real. It's coherent.
What is going on, party people in the house? Welcome back to what hopefully has become your favorite podcast here on the Yak Network. It is your Drunk Uncle Sports Podcast, and I'm your host, your Drunk Uncle Anwar Richardson. Again, thank you for tuning in, and thank you for listening. For some of you guys listening for the first time, because you're like, okay, I want to hear this interview that Anwar's going to have with Tim Crowder, see what the guys have to say. But what the hell is up with the name Drunk Uncle? I don't get it. All right, let me just explain the concept, the genesis of the name, the Drunk Uncle. So I was thinking about how to name this podcast. I started thinking about all the different things. I started thinking about this is supposed to be a family. And this is why I want this thing to be kind of be a family affair for us. You know, you can't have a family gathering without your uncles. And there's all types of different uncles that are out there. Some of you guys may have heard the D.L. Hughley version of that uncle. And I had to think of, okay, the best uncle that would describe me would be the drunk uncle. Because first of all, I like to have a couple of drinks, so let's start there. Second of all, though, I thought when your drunk uncle speaks, sometimes he says stuff that's silly, it's going to be off the cuff, it's going to be random, it's going to be a whole lot of things. But at the end of the day, your drunk uncle's going to drop some knowledge on you. And you're going to be like, man, drunk uncle really knows what he's talking about. And that's what I want this thing to be. I want this podcast to be entertaining. I want you guys to have a good time. It's fun topics. But at the end of the day, I want you to walk away feeling like you've learned something new and feel like, man, this podcast provided some good information for me. So that's the way you get the name Drunk Uncle's Podcast. And I want to make sure no one was thrown off by that. And Drunk Uncle Podcast, regardless, still has a sponsor. That's right. It's the Lowy Law Firm, y'all. Adam Lowy. He's one of the top personal injury lawyers in Austin. Apparently, he's not paying me to speak really well. Adam is a proud graduate of the University of Texas School of Law and started his law firm in 2005. I promise you, I haven't had a drink yet. Adam helps people who have been injured in car crashes, slips and falls, dog bites. Anytime I see a loose dog, I just think, man, if this dog bites me, I get to call Adam. And he also helps you in a lot of other different ways. So look, he is actively involved in every case that he handles. It is always available to talk or text. I suggest texting him at 2 o'clock in the morning and asking what he's wearing. That should get his attention or his wife's attention. But if you or a loved one has been injured, you need to call the Lowy Law Firm today. Don't wait. 512-280-0800. That is 512-280-0800. 800-516-0800 and tell him your main man, the drunk Uncle Anwar Richardson, sent you his way so he knows that his dollars are going to good use, and so he re-ups and makes sure that I can do some nice things in life because we got a sponsor. So it's really great, and I really love Adam. He's a really key sponsor for everything that we do. Like, the one thing I love about Adam is Adam's in the Anwar business, man. Like, Adam shows me love. Like, there's a lot of people who may talk about showing you love. Adam, like, he feels the love. He sponsors my Sunday pulpit. He sponsors my tagline on Orange Bloods. He sponsors the podcast. And in return, I make sure Adam gets a lot of love, not only on Orange Bloods, the podcast, social media. We're getting that name out there because one day Adam's going to be a big dog. He's going to cut me a check for $100,000 to sponsor my podcast, and I'm going to be here for it. So if you need anything, you or a friend need anything that are going through stuff, and you just need to sue the hell out of somebody because you need to get paid, call my main man, Adam Lowy, or if you just sue him because you're hurt. And then that works too. Man, it's been interesting, y'all, because this is a bye week. And the bye week usually just means that for me, it's time to catch up on errands. For you guys, it's time to, you know, live your life, check out what else is going on. I don't have to worry about Saturday. So I just been spending time with the family, but I've had to do a little bit of work this week. I had some Keandre Coburn news on Monday morning, or Tuesday morning, actually, that says that he was still in a boot, but a little mild high ankle sprain. When I talked to my sources this week, they kind of expected and told me that he could be back for the Kansas game. And I just thought about it. I was like, why? why would he be back for the Kansas game? Like, why is he playing? And then it's interesting thought because it's really going to tie into the Tim Crowder interview that I'm going to have that you guys are going to have in a few minutes. And I'm pre-recorded and I'm going to let you know this interview is great. Like, this interview is great. I've had a lot of great people on this year. My Andy Staples of the world, Vance Bedford, was on. I got to get Quan on. Just Quan and I just kind of talk at some point. We should do that. Memo to self, invite Quan onto your podcast. I've had a lot of good reporters, Jason Kersey from The Athletic. Like, I've had a tons of great guys. Ketch always comes in. I got my man's Dustin and Jason. I don't think I've ever had Alex on. But then again, he tweeted today about, or yesterday, about pumpkin pie being greater than macaroni and cheese. So a guy like that who thinks like that, I don't ever think I can have on my podcast, to be quite honest with you, because I just got to question all kinds of sanity with anyone that just has the nerve to say anything bad about macaroni and cheese. Like, you just, if you don't think macaroni and cheese is good, then you just have never had any good macaroni and cheese. And some of it, that's cultural, but some of it is just being deprived of the good things in life. And so that's how I feel about Alex. So Alex may or may not ever be on my podcast. At one point I may think about it or consider it. But it's interesting because someone on Orange Bloods, I suggested, they probably go ahead and rest Coburn for this game against Kansas. And someone on Orange Bloods said to me, he said, are we at the point where we can even overlook Kansas? And I thought to myself, I was like, man, it's a hell of a point, because last year that was a life or death game. That game needed a last minute drive by Sam Ehlinger to prevent a loss. And the year before that, when you went to the Big 12 championship game, that was actually a one touchdown victory against Kansas. Think about that. Like, Kansas isn't really good right now. But the fact that we're going into the game thinking, man, I don't even know if you can rest your starters, that says a lot. The fact that you're not even thinking, like, yeah, by, halftime, third quarter, you can go ahead and rest some guys, that says a lot. It is, it's kind of a prelude to the interview that I had with Tim Crowder, because the one thing he said I thought was really, really fascinating. He talked about when he played back at UT. Those guys would try to – he said one of the coaches told him that good teams beat the hell – out of the bad teams. Good teams blow teams out. And, rather great teams. Let me even rephrase that. Great teams blow teams out.
And the good teams win these close games here or there, which is like you're okay team, but you're really not great. You're just kind of good. And it really made me start thinking about this Texas football team, and it really made me think about over the past couple of years because, I mean, yes, they blew out UTEP. But when's the last conference blowout that you've seen from this team? You can't think of one. Right. And you look at other programs and you can use, okay, Oklahoma. I mean, they'll blow out somebody. I mean, they have no problem blowing out some folks. And when's the last time you've seen UT just blow out a conference opponent? I don't know if it's going to happen next Saturday against Kansas. And the fact that we don't know if Texas will face a winless team next week and be able to assert its will says that this program still has room for growth, says that this program has room for improvement. And Tim's going to get into a lot of good things about culture and the locker room. And one fascinating thing he said is like, man, we never even spoke the word culture. That was just what was expected when you were at UT. What was expected when they were at UT was that that young people weren't even going to play. Because that's how good they were. I know you're like, man, but dude, why don't you shut the hell up and play the damn interview, Onward? No, I'm laying the foundation for this interview right now of some of the things I'm going to say, because no matter how I say it, I won't be able to say it quite the way he did. And he talked about just what that meant in being around that winning. And you kind of hear that and you're like, man, that makes a huge difference. So pay attention to what he says as relates to the self-policing that you hear about, how they picked up the slack for the coaches. Pay attention to those little things and then start thinking about, have you heard that being said here currently over the last 5 years, 6 years, when they start talking about culture? What things are being said and what things aren't being said? It's a great, fantastic interview. I'm so happy that he came on. This is definitely one of the better interviews that we've had this year. I'll let you guys figure out what's the top of it, but give me some feedback. Make sure you follow him. Enough of me, enough of your drunk uncle, enough of Anwar. You're here for Tim. Let's go ahead and get into it. All right, listen, if you are a Texas fan, all I got to say is two words, and I don't have to say anything else. Tim Crowder. That's it. You know him. He's still here in the Texas area. He's here in Round Rock. You remember from the national championship team, second round draft pick. And he is one of the great Longhorns that has played one of the better defensive linemen really that we've seen. Man, I got to think about how many defensive linemen have been drafted since Tim was. Not many that high, that's for damn sure. But gracious enough to come and enjoy my podcast. Tim, my man, how are you?
Man, I'm doing excellent. Just ready to shoot the bull.
or break some chicken necks, as some country folks that I heard before the podcast might say. Tim, before we talk about anything, you are the founder of Nuclear Athletes, you know, strength coach, speed development. Tell me what you're doing out here in the Round Rock area, because I'm really fascinated by this.
So basically back in 2014, I had just retired from the NFL. I started coaching as far as the private sector. I wanted to go into the public school districts, but, you know, I had more fun in the private sector. I was able to coach whoever I wanted. I didn't have to kind of discriminate against, oh, I can only coach kids at Huddle. I can only coach kids in Round Rock. I got a chance to coach kids everywhere. I have kids from Killeen, Georgetown, South Austin, North Austin, Cedar Parks, Liberty Hill. I mean, I've had kids all over. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I love to do is I love to work with the kids. We work mainly middle school and high school football players. I take on track athletes from here and there as far as working on their speed development. But I'm a speed development coach, strength and conditioning, and I'm also a football position coach.
Okay, so tell me, what do you do with the guys? You know, like if I'm a parent and I'm like, okay, I know that Tim Crowder's got something that's going on. I know the name. What will you be doing with my son in order to enhance his speed? Give me an idea. Give me a rundown.
Well, first I'm gonna set up an assessment. I need to see what I'm working with. I need to see what your kid is good at. I need to see what they're not good at. My job as a coach is to say, you know what? let's throw away all that stuff that you're not good at. Let's not even focus on that. Let's focus on the stuff that you are good at. One thing that a lot of athletes don't do is master themselves. That's one thing I constantly preach to those guys. You need to focus on mastering yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was a pass rusher, I couldn't spin that good, so I stopped doing it. I was still effective. So you have to learn how to master yourself. And I would basically break you down during that evaluation. I'm going to find out how fast or slow you are. I'm going to find out how sudden you are, how explosive you are. Well, what position you play, I'm pretty sure you're going to tell me already what position your son would play. But I would ask what position he plays. And then I might put him at other positions. If he's very young, if he's in middle school, I might say, you know what? He might need to try that linebacker. Or he might need to try the defensive back because he has a lot of natural speed. Now, I'm going to get him faster, but I think he's more – he may should try for quarterback. You just never know. So I think that's where you have somebody like me where you come into play and do those things.
So now let me ask you this. If a parent may say to themselves, okay, but he's a part of the high school program and you know, they train, you know, a lot of times, you know, year round and, you know, the coaches seem to know what they're doing. What's the benefit of going outside of the high, my high school or my middle school, but what's the benefit of hiring someone else with that kind of, you know, that could do something different? What's the benefit?
That's a really, really good question, and I always get that. And one of the reasons I'm good at what I do is I have a great relationship with a lot of high school and middle school coaches around here because I tell my athletes, I say, hey, man, I'm the tutor. I'm not your primary teacher. Your coaches at school is your primary teacher. I'm your tutor. I'm the guy that you come to. Even if you are great at math, I'm the guy that can get you to that next level, to where we thinking about college or we thinking about middle school or we thinking about high school, you know, calculus or whatever your next step is. Or you can say, you know what, hey, I'm the superstar because I have a lot of superstar athletes. I've had Alfred Collins, Landon Watson. I've had a lot of great athletes, right? Mm-hmm. And they still come out there and work with me. So, you know what, I already know I got 15 to 20 offers, but I need somebody that's going to get me ready and prepare for the next level. My high school coaches are doing a wonderful job. They are. But you got to understand, within a two-hour practice, we only got 15, 20 minutes of individual drills. And after that, we're too busy doing install. We have team periods. And I can't get that one-on-one. You know, I don't have those eyes looking at me every single rep to say, hey, do this. Hey, do that. Do this. Do that. So that's when they work with me. I'm that person that can come in. And plus, I'm the jack of all trades, master of many. I don't like that master of none. I'm the master of many. I'm the guy that say, you know what? Let's see if you're really doing speed training, because I promise you, when we come out here, you're going to know what speed training really is. We're not going to have a lot of cones set up. We're going to work on linear speed, and we're going to build your explosive strength as well on top of your functional ability.
Now, let me ask you this, Tim, because it's fascinating because you're known for football, but you played baseball, right, back in the day, back in high school. Give me, you know, back then the multi-sport athlete was kind of the thing. You know, you had the kids that played, you know, baseball and basketball or basketball and football. And it just seems to be a lot more of the concentration over the last decade or so of just – one specific, you know, app, you know, sport, and more so than anything else. What's your thought on that? Because could you still be a multi-sport athlete in today's times when you've got, year-round football plus I've got strength coaches and this and that? I mean, could you be able to do that, or is that kind of harder to do it? And what's your opinion on kids that just focusing on one?
Well, you got to understand this. Number one, and this is talking with coaches as well, because a lot of coaches, specifically at that high school level, they are a walking contradiction. And I don't mean to, you know, talk about anybody. It's not about that. And just hear me out. This is what I mean by them being a walking contradiction, right? So many of these coaches, they might say, hey, I want you guys to play at least two sports or three sports, okay? But what if you have an athlete that's just not good enough for those two or three sports? Because you have some athletes that say, you know what, I'm just a football player. I'm not good at that other stuff. And that's fine. Because back in my days, well, my coach would have said, hey, just go to the all-season program for football and go home. You know, and I'll see you in track season or whenever you get into your sport. Or if you're just good in that, it's fine. So be it. But then we say, you know what? We got to collect a group of guys right here where they can play multiple sports like me. So we're not going to hinder these guys. So what we'll do during basketball season, you can't attend football all season workouts. So, hey, go to basketball. We'll see you in the spring. And then, oh, you got baseball. Somebody like me, where I was a pitcher, I couldn't lift all those weights like the other guys. But some of my coaches, they ended up making that fatal mistake with me the more I played, because they had me bench pressing on the same day I had to pitch 100 throws. Mm. So what do you think happened to my elbow and shoulder after a while, right? Mm-hmm, so that was an issue that I had, that I ran into myself. So I think coaches have to do a better job of, if you want the kids to play multiple sports, you must educate yourself in order to train those kids properly how to do multiple sports. Because you can't say, hey, I want this kid to gain 20 pounds or 30 pounds over the offseason, but I got them wrestling where they have to keep their weight down to a certain limits in order to stay in that weight limit. That's mm-hmm. a contradiction. So you have to really sit down with these athletes and say, you know what? These athletes are this. They need to be in this pile. Let's put these athletes over here in this pile. These are going to be our football year-round guys. They're going to make the biggest strides when it comes to lifting weights and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, we still have a collective group, and everybody's getting their needs met in our high school program. Because that's at the end of the day, that's what it's about. Can we get our athletes' needs met? It's not about us. It's not. We're going to win state. We're going to do all that. We're going to win games. But at the end of the day, we are a service to our athletes. We want to meet our athletes' needs at the high school level. And if I ran a high school program, that's exactly how it would be.
So let me ask you one more question about the business, because I find it really, you know, fascinating. Is that, you know, if you've got a parent that brings their kid to you and says, you know, I want you to work with Tim Crowder. I remember him at UT. I remember him getting drafted by the Broncos. And how do you kind of deal with maybe the expectation that, well, Tim's just going to turn my kid into a five-star athlete and a potential NFL draft pick? Like, how do you kind of have them pump the brakes on what to expect out of you? And what you're realistically able to do, because I mean, you can't squeeze, you know, blood from a tournament. You can only get so much out of certain athletes. So how do you deal with the expectation level?
Well, good for me. I haven't really had too many of those parents. I guess when they see me in person, they see my size. Uh-huh. they look at their kid and be like, you know what? I don't think that's ever going to be you, Johnny. So we just need to master this level, and we'll worry about that later. You know, mm-hmm. so because I see the difference now. What got him so far? Because it's a lot of his genetics. I should have got with another man or something. I don't know. But I'm just joking. But anyhow. Man, I'm very honest with people. People who dealt with me, they know I'm very brutally honest. I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, but I've been in the NFL, man, and I know how it goes, man. And there's so much lying going on that just tell me the truth, man, and just give it to me cut and dry, and I can get better that way. Just don't keep lying to me and then cut me. So I had that same mentality when it comes to talking to a kid. I might say, you know what? I don't never put a ceiling. That's one thing I don't do. I don't never put a ceiling on a kid, because I don't know what they may grow into. I don't know what they may have two short parents and they may be 6'4". I've seen that happen before. So I don't never put a ceiling on the kid. All I tell is the kid, and I say, you know what? I promise you this. You're going to leave her stronger, faster, more agile, and your mentality is going to be through the roof. You're going to believe in yourself when you get down with here. Now, it's up to you to put that together on the football field or on the track or whatever. So that's one of the things that I tell those athletes. And I have their parents right there so they can hear everything. Hello?
Yeah, okay. You can pick it back up. Go ahead. You said you have the parents right there.
Yeah, so I have the parents right there, mm-hmm. and I tell them exactly what I tell the athletes. You know, so I have them. We all together. We all one big family, and we all working towards one goal.
How many of the kids even know that you played in the NFL?
Pretty sure all of them. You know, okay, kids nowadays, they just go to Google.
Because they didn't see you play. They just got Google for it. Here's the one thing we do know. They didn't see you play in college, right? Because that 2005 national championship team was 15 years ago. So we're talking about these kids were either conceived on the night that y'all won it or you know, a couple of years, you know, after that. So which is kind of crazy. I'm going to ask you a question about that in a second. But what do you remember? I know you probably get asked this so much, but of that national championship season, what are some of the memories that you have of that whole ring, that unless you just watch it on LHN every week and you don't have to remember it?
Man, I remember the journey more than anything. You know, the finish line, of course, I remember the finish line and what happened, but I remember the journey more. You know, I remember the 6 a.m. workouts. I remember the struggle. I remember being so tired where you're on your knees and your brother's gotta pick you up in order to stand. You know, I remember the brotherly fist fights where it's accountability. You know, it's like, okay, man, I've told you several times and you still not getting a point. So I don't know what else I'm gonna have to tell you. You know, so and that truck is loud. But but yeah, so you know, I remember that and just put it all together at the end, and it's just amazing, man, just the work you put in where you have all these guys come together and think of one. And it takes a lot to do that. A lot of times the coaches are the ones who have to keep bringing that home, because a culture starts with one person. You know, a lot of people don't understand it. A culture starts with the person at the top. So when they said the way they are, the way their mentality is, it's going to whoever he hires, he's going to think of himself. So he's going to have a bunch of people who are very similar to he is. And the people that he recruit, they're going to be basically very similar to what he is. If he works hard, if he's honest, he's very humble, he's going to recruit people that are like that. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, everything comes together, and that's how everybody's on the same page. You know, but if you're a liar, if you don't have high morals, you're going to recruit people that doesn't have morals. So that's kind of how it goes.
You know, Malik Jefferson said something, you know, a few years ago, and it didn't go over well with some folks, but I think his overall point was, you know, at some point, this Texas program has to move past Vince Young as its biggest memory. Right, as the crowning achievement of the program, and they've got to make new memories. Right, they have to have new successes and you know, and new achievements as a Longhorn. What do you think about, since you guys won the championship and since 2009 to where you guys are now? Give me your thoughts on the program and the state of the program.
Well, to kind of elaborate on what, you know, Malik said, my thing is, okay, well, go do it. Go mm-hmm. make new memories. So we don't have to think about that no more. Mm-hmm. You know, when Colt McCoy and those guys went to the championship, we was thinking about Colt McCoy and those guys. But they didn't win it, so guess what? Your mind is going to go back to the greatest feeling of all, which is that's what it was, the national championship. But since then, we haven't had anything. So your mind can only go back, because that's just the defense mechanism. That's how we survive. That's how we keep from stressing. We're always going to go back to the happiest times. So that's kind of where we at right now. My saying to the players, say, okay, if Vince Young not walking through that door, what are you going to do? Make your memories. Because when I got to Texas, I wasn't thinking about anybody else. I wasn't thinking about what the guys before me did. All I heard about was 10 win seasons and how I wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. You know, so my thing was, is like, man, these 10 win seasons is not good enough. We got to win it all. Like that was the standard. Yeah. If we didn't win it all, we didn't do our job. So I wonder, are those guys talking that way? Or are they talking about, hey guys, we got to get back to 10 wins again? You know, because they done got humble. But it's just a different mentality. So it's just that the coaches, again, it comes down to the coaches have to be the ones that's reinforcing it. And you would know if the coaches are enforcing it because you hear the players say it all the time. Even when they're speaking to the media, they can't help but to say it because they are an extension of what the coaches always say.
So for, when y'all was there, what was the thing that they were hammering the most within the program?
Win the Big Ten championship, win it all. That's really what it was. Mm-hmm. You know, win it all. It wasn't anything less than that was not good enough. And it wasn't okay to just win. We had to dominate guys. You know, we had a very good D coordinator, Gene Chizik, you know, Greg Robinson. Like, they was just like, no, like, don't let up. I don't care if we win in 60-3 or 60-0. I don't want them to score three. And we would be pissed off if they get 3 points at the end of the game. Wow. You know, like, we would get chewed out about that. Like, I know we won 60-3, but they shouldn't even got three, guys. So that's kind of was the mentality. It kept us on our feet. It kept us humble. And it kept us with that, that killer instinct. I mean, and you had all of us thinking like that to the point where we would tell each other, like, hey, man, don't forget about it. They got three the last time. We can't let them get three this time. That's just a different mentality if you have it like that.
Wow. And does that just carry over from one recruiting class to another? Like, when the young kids come in, you're like, this is the expectation here at Texas, and then that class then teaches knows the next one. This is the, you know what I'm saying? Does one begot another when you get it rolling like that?
When we was there, that's how it was, because the younger guys, they didn't play as much because they redshirted, because we was too good.
Yeah.
So we would teach them. And then the thing about it was brothers. You know, me and Brian Robinson, we was like, dude, I want Rack to be better than both of us when we leave. I want him to break all records. You know, I want those guys to be better than us. Lamar Houston and, you know, Henry Melton. I want those guys to be better than us. And that's how I was. So we did everything we could. We would stay at the practice to teach those guys. If Coach Giles or somebody had a meeting to get to, don't worry about it, Coach. I'll get him in the weight room. We'll discuss it in the weight room. Oh, he needs to watch more film? Don't worry. I'll be in there anyway, because I'm already going to be in there watching the film. Oh, he needs to work out? Don't worry. I'll work out at 6 in the morning anyway, so he can come in there with me. You know, I remember when Rack first got there, when a Rack Poe first got there, when he got around me, that's when he started realizing, like, oh, okay, this is what hard work really is. You know, a lot of people don't know that, because they only know Rack as a senior. But I remember when he had got there, he was only 210 pounds. So yeah. We would be in the weight room together. So that's kind of how it was back in those days. But they understood because they was around us all the time. I remember we had I can tell you a crazy story. So it's me, and I had Roger McElroy as my host. Uh-huh. And I'm sorry, I was a host, and he was my recruit. And so Roger McElroy, we go out on the town and all this and that. We, you know, we go party and stuff. And so, you know, I get into it with somebody downtown. I don't know who it was. You know, I was probably intoxicated and just ready to fight back in those days.
Yeah, well, yeah. You
know, I was a loose cannon, man. Some of the stuff I did, I'm just glad it was in that era. But so anyhow, I'll never forget. I told him, I said, hey, man, I said, you recruiting or what? I said, you going to commit or what? You know, he both from East Texas. He's like, man, I'm coming, dude. I'm coming. I said, all right, cool. I said, all right, man, if we get in a fight out here, I expect you to help. Let's see if you're really real. He's like, man, I'm down, man. I'm talking to a high school recruit telling him, like, hey, if we get in a fight right now, you better jump in. So that just was a different mentality back in those times.
you didn't fight nobody that night, did you?
No, I don't think so. I ain't going to incriminate myself. We didn't fight nobody.
I don't like that pause. That pause was like, for business purposes, nothing happened. But I get that is, so this is where, when we hear the words culture, right? Is that's essentially what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's what it is. And what's crazy about it, that culture, where I never heard a culture word not one time during my 4 years at UT.
Really?
We never heard the word culture. It was just a part of it. It's just how it was. Just like growing up in the country in East Texas, we didn't know what organic food was. We just got it from the ground. Mm-hmm. It was just a way of life. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to say that the food was organic. We already knew that.
So when you compete at the high level and you win it all, and then you watch your program struggle, how hard is it as a guy that you know what it takes to get there, and when you see your team failing to, you know, it's been to one Big 12 championship since 2009. How tough is that?
A few years ago, I would get so wrapped up into the games, like before then, I felt like I was still like a player, to the point where like I would be ready to tape my fingers when the horns play on TV. Like, mm-hmm. I'm ready to go put my hand in the dirt. And so I'll never forget, they lost to somebody and they started losing to like teams they should beat. And I'll never forget, they lost and my heart started hurting, like literally. And I had to go for a walk to kind of like walk it off. And I told myself that, I said, man, I'm starting to get way too emotional in this, because I feel like if they don't feel this way, why do I need to feel this way? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm saying, I used to feel that emotional. Like when we used to lose, like I would just go in my room and just sulk in my sorrow, man. Like not cry anything, but I would like literally like, no, I'm not going out. You know, I might chill with my girlfriend. That was about it. Like I don't want to talk about nothing, you know? So I had to kind of remove myself from that, you know? So, and then they just start losing over and over and over again. I'm just like, come on now. Like, this just don't make any sense. You know, like, why are we talking about Iowa State like they Oklahoma or something? Like, I don't care if they got Matt Campbell up there. I don't care who their players are. They're freaking Iowa State. You know, they're freaking Kansas. You know, like, who cares? Like, we're the University of Texas, man. Like, don't you ever feel like we was cocky with it. Like, we love the, like, TCU and those teams. Like, get out of here. Like, that was just our mentality, mm-hmm. you know? And, of course, we had some close games every once in a while with those teams. But then the next year, we'd beat their brakes off because we realized that, hey, we might have been a little bit too cocky. Mm-hmm. But we would have never been great if we didn't have that mentality, that attitude. And I think that may be what they need. They may need to get more guys like that around. I know they got Michael Huff up there, but they may probably need more of us and just get those guys a bigger voice to speak up and say, man, this ain't it, dude. Like, this ain't it right here. Like, y'all expectations are way too low. Mm.
How hard is it now? Because, listen, you've been on, you know, good teams. I remember, you know, your first year in Tampa. You were on the 09 team in Tampa.
The one with we went 10-3. 10-6.
Was that your first year there?
Second year.
So the first year y'all struggled, right?
Oh yeah, and we was bad. Yeah,
the first year, because I was there, because I covered you down there in Tampa. The first year, I think, you know, was like it may have been 3, and then y'all turned it around to 10. How hard is it to change? Because I won't say there's a losing culture at Texas, but it's clearly not a championship culture. So
because it's the mentality. That's really what it come down to, because it was just like Tampa. Like, it really wasn't a talent difference. Mm-hmm. It was a mentality difference. Mm-hmm. You know, and Raheem, he just kept drilling at home, and other coaches like, hey, man, we ain't sweating that. Like, we still good. You know, Raheem, you know, he's a very confident dude.
Yeah.
We were just like, we still good. Like, don't worry, we'll get it. We'll get this and this. And so they made those changes during the off season, and we got some things ironed out. You know, we got some added pieces. We subtracted some other ones, and bam, that was it. And then we got on the roll, and then we started really believing, like, dude, we all pretty dang good. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's mm-hmm. kind of how it happens. You can get used to losing, and you can get used to winning too.
Yeah. And so what is it you go down? How often do you make it down to campus, you know, and be around the team? Is that just I may not be able to do it this season, obviously, because of COVID. But prior to this, how often were you able to get down?
Well, in the off season, I used to be down there quite often during mm-hmm. the off seasons, because I would work out some of my guys around there in that area.
So, but, I mean, do you sense like what it takes? Because when you watch it this year, it's fascinating, because, you know, Texas sits at 5-2, could easily be another way, but, you know, your record is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at, okay, close loss to TCU, close loss to Oklahoma. easily could be, 7-0. Could have lost the one at Texas Tech, could have lost the one at Oklahoma State. So, like I said, it goes either way. What do you identify as the team's challenge when you kind of, look at it from your expert point of view?
Of course, you can always have some good close games. One thing my coach, he once said that, he said the main thing that to tell a sign of a really, really good team is they have a bunch of blowouts. He was like, guys, he said, I'm telling you, the sign of a good team. He said, we're going to find out how good of a team we are. He said, a team that always have a bunch of close wins, they're not that good. And it's going to get exposed at some point in time. He said, but if you have a team that's blowing everybody out, and then they have that one nail biter and they find a way to win, those are the signs of a great team. And that's exactly what we had during the national championship season. We blew a lot of people out, but we had a couple nail biters. We had the one with Oklahoma State, we had to come from behind and win. And then after that, we got over that hump and we was good to go. And we had another nail biter against Ohio State, but of course they was a top five team in the country. So that's a little different.
Yeah. That's different than TCU is what you're trying to say?
Yeah, exactly. That's a lot different than TCU.
Yeah. So that's the difference between good and great, right? Is being able to search your will and search your dominance. Well, I mean, you haven't seen that much. I mean, you've seen it against UTEP early this year, but you haven't really seen that much. So that basically means in your mind, this is a good team, just not great.
Yeah, because every game is a close, hard-fought victory. Every one, right? So it's like, okay, they're a good team, but they ain't that point. And that's just being honest. You can't get angry about that. Prove me wrong. But I've been there before. I know how it goes. Mm-hmm. Look at Clemson. Look at Alabama. They blow out everybody. They have a couple of nail biters, right?
Yeah.
And they win that game late. Everybody thinks they're going to lose, but they win that game, and they end up right back in the national championship again. Mm-hmm. But they blew out the majority of people, even some of the good ones who was probably the top 15 or 20, and they just blew them out too. So we had the same thing for our team when we went to the national championship. USC, if you look at all the patterns of college teams that went to the national championship team, they was dominant football teams.
You have a good point here. All right, so let me ask you from a defensive perspective, as a guy who played in the league and then, of course, is doing some coaching, what's your impression of Joseph Osai?
Man, I'm very impressed with him. I've coached Joseph before. He has so much potential. He's still so raw. That's what people don't even understand, like how raw he is. Like from a pass rush standpoint, he's starting to get the gist of it. Like he's learning on the move, like on the fly right now, but I'm looking at his moves. I'm just like, oh, man, your long arm stab could be so much better. Like, your plan, you can have a better pass rush plan. What is your go-to move? Like, what is your signature move? Every pass rusher has that signature move. Mm-hmm. What is it? What is that move where you just throw that fastball every time and say, man, you can't do nothing about it? So it's just like, it's so many things I'm seeing. Like, he's a heck of a run defender. He plays hard. And, that's nothing. He does all those things, but and that's why I keep talking to him behind the scenes. Like, hey, man, keep working. Keep working on your pass rush because that's what's going to set you above everybody else is that pass rush. Because when you go against that one very good tackle, either you're going to get humble or you're going to realize, like, man, I'm pretty dang good.
Yeah.
So, and I said, that's exactly what the tape that scouts are going to look at. They're going to say, forget all the other people who wasn't ranked, but they're going to watch the tape of that guy that was really, really good that you played against. And they're gonna judge your tape or judge you off of that tape.
Mm. So is he a guy that you feel like is ready to make that jump after this season? Or does he need another year of development here?
I think that if he continue on the trajectory that he's going now, mm-hmm. I think he should leave. Because mm-hmm. he's having a phenomenal season. And he's getting better and better every week. But if he kind of plateaus off, he may need to come back for another year to continue to develop. You know, he may not be drafted. He may have great stats, but he may not be as drafted as high as he think he should. Like, he may win the accolades and, you know, he may have good production, but as far as being that impact player, that Joey Bosa, that Chase Young and Nick Bosa, those type of players where they may have zero sacks and zero tackle for losses one game, but when a scout watches their video, they're going to say, well, they may have zero sacks, but they was a cause of five sacks and they was a cause of two interceptions. That's an impact player. Mm-hmm. You see the difference?
Yeah.
So I think when he gets to that point, that's one thing I keep preaching. Hey, you got to be an impact player, impact player. It's just not about production, impact, impact, impact. You got to be able to, you got to be able to affect the, you got to be able to make the play even when you don't make the play as far as from a productive standpoint.
The last thing on the side is he's, you know, what is he about, like 255 or something to that effect? I mean, what position does he play on the next level in your opinion?
So Joe's about 6'4". He may be a slight bit taller than me. He might be the same height, one of them. He's about 6'4".
Mm-hmm.
He's about 250, 255. Joe could be a heck of a stand-up outside linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
Around that Von Miller, those 3-4 backers. He can be that because he can drop into coverage. And that might just be what he be. It just depends on what team draft him. It may be some team say, you know what, I want his hand in the dirt. He might have to get a little bigger. You know, I don't know. You know, nowadays they have a lot of four-down defensive end that are playing at 250, 255 now. So it's not – you don't need those big 270 guys anymore. You know, a lot of teams on speed. They want guys that are interchangeable.
What do you think of so far Taquan Graham, 49? What do you think about his development this season?
He's another one. At first, I think he was being a little hesitant, or he was kind of still brainwashed by that previous system where they have to basically take two and kind of hold blocks on the line of scrimmage. But now I'm starting to see him get up the field. I'm starting to see him get activated, get more penetration in the backfield. His biggest thing is I just want him to shed blocks quicker so he can basically make more plays. Because he still kind of got that mentality where he kind of hang on to a block too long and that can cause him to get held. Like, man, you need to, you know, get attached to that guy, shed him down, go make the play, find the ball. So once he kind of get that down and play a little faster, he'll be better. But he has all the intangibles and all the measurables. And I mean, he's one of the strongest guys on the team, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. So from an overall defensive perspective, from the team that you saw versus Texas Tech to what you saw this past weekend versus West Virginia, what's your thought process on the defense and how they've come along?
They really starting to gel. They starting to gel at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
The D-line, the linebackers, the secondary, they all kind of starting to become one unit. Of course, you know, everybody always talk about the cornerbacks, but you only talk about the cornerbacks when you get caught on. You know, nobody say nothing about it when they don't get caught on. It's kind of like playing offensive line. Nobody says anything about the O-line until they give up a sack. Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those things that the defense is really gelling together. They playing hard. They not – one of the biggest things with helping those guys out is I don't see too many much missed tackles anymore. And if you do see a missed tackle, somebody's there to clean it up. So it's not a big mistake, you know, because everybody's playing hard and really running to the football.
Yeah, let me ask you a couple more. I'll let you go. Obviously, like you said, the defense is definitely playing better. Linebacker position, what do you see, you know, from those guys, the Marvions, oh my gosh, is Juwan Mitchell, like what do you see or what do you like out of what you see from those guys?
So on the radio show, I was talking about how don't be surprised if DeMarvion Overshawn leaves early if he keeps playing at this type of level.
Mm.
Because he's exactly the body type of an NFL linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
He's the new prototypical type. He's the guy that spent down from safety. You know, he's about 6'2", 6'3", about 215, 20 pounds. You know, he's that guy. And he's physical in the run game enough to go in there and hold his own. Like, he plays much heavier. But he can also run side to sideline. He's not that A-gap to A-gap guy anymore. He's a guy that can play in the sideline, and he can cover really well. He can go in the back end and cover. He can actually go out, and he just don't have to do your traditional seam, the flat, or curl, the flat, you know, drops of your hook. He can actually go out there and man up on a running back if they motion out in the backfield. You know, he can go, you know, cover the slot. Of course, he may have help over the top, but he can actually cover the guy in man. And that's what they're looking for now, because it's all about the matchup. You know, football is about three things when you really break it down. It's about numbers, angles, and mismatches. And that's what offenses are doing. They take advantage of the mismatch. So defenses are trying to recruit athletes to be able to combat those mismatches.
All right, here's one of the last things I want to ask you is, you know, there's a lot of attention that's been given to the rotation on offense. And I know you're a defensive guy, but you're a football guy who's played on every level. Rotating running backs in and out the way Texas does, or rotating receivers, you know, they talk about trying to keep guys fresh. Old school mentality is, you know, letting guys wear someone down. What's your thought process on this, the rotation that you see at the skill positions on offense?
Well, my thing is that as a coach, in order to help the team win and to do the best for the team, you have to put the best player on the field as much as possible. That's what it really comes down to. You don't want to hurt anybody else's feelings, but it is what it is. They need to get better if they're not in a rotation. The best players play. If you want to win, you put the best players on the field as much as possible. The probability of winning a football game goes up if you have the best players on the field the majority of the time. You know, so that's the thing. You have to play the best players as much as possible. They only come out when they need a break, and then you put them right back in there. That was our philosophy when I was there. So, you know, the coach would tell us all the time, we're not in charge of the depth chart. You are. It's based on where you practice and what you do in these games. So if you want to play, get better in those two areas. And if a guy beat you to the punch, he beat you to the punch. You know, so he got on the field and he made something happen. So we're not going to take him off the field. Why? We are cheating the team. We're cheating you, and we're cheating your teammates if we take a guy out that has 80 yards on 8 carries. We're going to rest them. We're going to set them down and let somebody else go in. No, that's not fair to the team.
Yeah.
And that's not fair to that guy, because as a football player, man, you get in the groove of the game. You get a chance to mess up and redeem yourself and say, oh, I get to figure out, okay, oh, okay, I see what he don't like. Wait a minute, that nose guard, he likes to peek in that backside, so I'm going to stay front side a little bit more. But if you keep coming out constantly, you don't even get to see that. So you have to, same thing as playing receiver. At the end of the day, football is a game of a bunch of little eyes playing one-on-ones, just like how you was in the backyard with you and your buddies or at the neighborhood park. It was a bunch of, y'all was a team, but it was a bunch of little eyes going to war with each other out there. And you was figuring him out and he was figuring you out, but you was going at it. But if that never happens, you never get a chance to figure anybody out.
Yeah, it seems absolutely, you know, tough. And then, you know, you wonder why receivers may have a drop, or, you know, why guys don't get cooking. And I've always been wondering, like, well, a guy might drop a ball because he hasn't been in the game in, you know, 30, 40 minutes, and then comes in for, you know, two plays. Like, that coldness is a thing. Listen, you've been more than great. Tell the people how they can find you in order to sign their kids up to, you know, to get some of the training with you, or follow you on Twitter, which I think is all obviously one and the same, but just give some people some information on you.
Well, right now we're in our off season. So this is kind of like our down period, because a lot of our athletes are playing their football right now. So we don't really try to train them during the season. We let the coaches go. You know, we put all the work in during the off season. But in 2021, we should pick back up, and we try to get a little bit of the winter go by, because we go outside mainly. We're in Round Rock at O'Sellers Park. We try to pick back up late January, February. You can find me at nuclearathletes@yahoo.com. Email nuclearathletes.com is our website. You can also find me on, if you want to find some interesting entertainment, you can find me on Nuclear Athletes Twitter. That's me. I say everything. I don't sugarcoat it. I'm honest. I talk about all type of things, race, motivation, the truth. You know, that's the only thing I could kind of think about it, just the truth. I'm just a downright person. If you don't like me, that's your fault, because I know I'm coming with good intentions.
Man, fantastic interview, right? That's probably the best, one of the best interviews we had like all year long. So make sure you share that with everybody, and make sure you guys go and give him a follow on Twitter. Send your kids there. I think when my kids, if they ever evolve out of this basketball thing, I'm definitely going to send them over to Tim. Because my son is fast. My son is really, really fast. I got an 8-year-old, and so I think Tim can really work some wonders with him. And I forget what Tim says. Tim's going to have to make my kid into the NFL player. I want all my money back. All right, y'all. You guys take care. Remember, I want to say, live each day like it is your last, because one day it will be. We'll talk soon.